content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues for the next half hour. I'll be reading articles from the Harvard Heart Letter and possibly from the Harvard Health Letter as well. The first article is from the Harvard Heart Letter. This is the August 2023 issue, and it's entitled, Does Coffee Help or Harm Your Heart? Americans' favorite morning brew has gotten mixed reviews over the years. Here's a closer look at some of coffee's cardiovascular effects. Many people can't imagine starting their day without a cup or two of coffee. Despite its popularity, however, coffee has been a bit controversial when it comes to heart health. The thinking about coffee's effects on the heart has swung in both directions, says Dr. J. Michael Gaziano, professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. In the 1960s, coffee was considered a risk factor for coronary artery disease, although later research suggested that only heavy coffee consumption, more than 5 or 6 cups a day, might harm the heart. But people who drink excessive amounts of coffee often differ in many other ways from those who enjoy modest amounts, Dr. Gaziano notes. Because coffee contains caffeine, a stimulant, people have long wondered whether drinking coffee might jazz up the heart, triggering palpitations, the odd sensation of a skipped, missed, or strong heartbeat, or atrial fibrillation, a heart rhythm problem marked by a rapid, irregular heartbeat. However, people who drink moderate amounts of coffee, 1 to 3 cups per day, actually appear to have a lower risk of atrial fibrillation. According to a 2019 study co-authored by Dr. Gaziano, those who drank either more or less coffee were no more or less likely to develop atrial fibrillation. Like a lot of dietary research, that study was observational. People reported what they consumed, and researchers tracked their health over many years. But a new study took a different approach. It directly measured the short-term effects of drinking coffee. See the coffee connection. Steps and sleep. This new trial provides an important piece of the puzzle, says Dr. Gaziano. One finding that people took more steps on coffee drinking days upholds other research showing that caffeine can slightly enhance physical performance. On the other hand, caffeine's adverse effects on sleep are well known, and insufficient sleep is increasingly recognized as a risk to cardiovascular health. It's hard to know whether the extra exercise balances out the decreased shut-eye people may get from drinking coffee. Most people know how they react to coffee to adjust their intake accordingly, says Dr. Gaziano, who enjoys a daily cup that contains half decaffeinated coffee. But like all studies, the new study has limitations. It included only relatively young, healthy coffee drinkers, so the findings may not apply to older people who tend to be more likely to have palpitations. In fact, people who avoid coffee, and so weren't part of the study, may avoid the beverage because they notice it triggers palpitations. The study also discovered that drinking coffee led to a slight increase in premature ventricular contractions. These brief rhythm disturbances, which can feel as though the heart is pounding or flip-flopping, are common and usually harmless, especially in healthy people. But in people with heart disease who notice persistent odd heart rhythms, should talk to their doctor. Earlier research has investigated coffee's effects on other common heart-related risks. Although drinking coffee raises blood pressure, the effect is temporary and doesn't make you more likely to develop high blood pressure. It may even lower your risk. Unfiltered coffee, like French press coffee and espresso, contains compounds that may raise harmful LDL cholesterol. But the effect is likely trivial compared with the rest of your diet, especially if you drink no more than 2 cups of unfiltered coffee per day. The question I have is, what's the overall impact on the outcome I care most about, which is cardiovascular disease, says Dr. Gaziano. When you look at the evidence as a whole, coffee doesn't seem to have a positive or a negative effect. If you like coffee, enjoy up to a few cups per day, as long as it's not interfering with your sleep. Don't dump a lot of cream and sugar in your coffee, since that adds saturated fat and empty calories. And then there's an attached article which is entitled, The Coffee Connection, More Steps, Less Sleep, Possible Palpitations. Many coffee drinkers appreciate the energizing buzz from a morning cup of Joe, but does that boost have any short-term effects on the heart or other heart-related behaviors or risk factors, namely exercise, sleep, and blood sugar levels? To find out, researchers put wearable sensors on volunteers for a 2-week period. Their study, the Coffee and Real-Time Atrial and Ventricular Ectopy Trial, was published in March 2023 in the New England Journal of Medicine. They studied 100 healthy men and women who averaged age 39. The participants wore 3 separate devices, one that tracked activity levels and sleep, one that measured blood sugar, and one that monitored heart rhythm. They were also tested for common genetic variants that affect how quickly people metabolize caffeine. Researchers directed participants to drink as much caffeinated coffee as they wanted for 2 days and to activate the heart monitor after every cup they drank. They were then to abstain from coffee for 2 days. They repeated this cycle for 14 days. On the days the people drank coffee, they took an average of 1,000 extra steps per day, but they slept about 36 fewer minutes per night. Coffee drinking had no apparent effect on blood sugar, and while coffee consumption did not increase premature atrial contractions, it did appear to slightly increase the incidence of premature ventricular contractions. Genetic differences in caffeine metabolism had no meaningful effects on any of these outcomes. Next in the Harvard Heart Letter, here's a section in which Dr. Christopher Cannon, the editor-in-chief, answers some questions. And the first question is, as a 78-year-old male, I have an estimated life expectancy of another 9 years. Like most people my age, I would like to live longer and stronger. Because the CDC estimates that about a third of guys like me will die of heart disease, it seems that taking special care of my cardiovascular health could extend the quality and length of my life. But will I just be transferring my risk to other diseases that will end my life in roughly the same time frame? And Dr. Cannon responds, thanks largely to advances in medical care, especially in the field of cardiology, the average life expectancy in the United States rose dramatically over the past few decades. In 1960, the average person lived 70 years, but by 2019, that number had risen to 79. Unfortunately, this upward trend slowed in recent years, and the number began falling gradually due to the rise in rates of diabetes and obesity, both of which are leading contributors to poor cardiovascular health. The dramatic death toll from the COVID-19 pandemic also reduced average life expectancy, which fell to 76 years in 2021. Ideal cardiovascular health is important at any age, especially when it comes to avoiding strokes, which are often debilitating. As such, prevention remains an important strategy, even for people in their 70s and 80s. For the most part, the advice is similar to that for younger people. Lifestyle habits like exercising regularly, eating a healthy diet that includes lots of plant-based foods, and getting sufficient sleep, at least 7 hours a night, should be the central focus. And even for people in their 80s, there's a clear benefit to treating high blood pressure, elevated LDL cholesterol, and diabetes to lower the risk of heart problems. Avoiding having a heart attack, especially at the age of 80 or older, is a good thing in itself. You avoid the need for hospitalization, procedures, cardiac rehabilitation, and many new medications. Research suggests that people who follow heart-healthy recommendations also appear to have a lower risk of developing cancer. The opposite is also true. People with risk factors for heart disease, especially heart attack survivors, may have a higher risk of developing cancer. And keep this in mind. What's good for your heart is also good for your brain. Taking steps to dodge heart disease also seems to help prevent dementia, including Alzheimer's disease, currently the seventh leading cause of death in this country. There's no guarantee that these or other diseases won't occur as you age. Shifting the cause of death away from heart disease will likely improve your longevity, maybe enabling you to reach 100. Now here's another article from the Harvard Heart Letter, and it's entitled Race, Racism, and Heart Disease, Why Awareness Matters. And underneath it, it says, discrimination and its downstream effects may underlie the survival gaps in cardiovascular disease between racial groups. The aftermath affects everyone. In the United States, black adults are more than twice as likely to die of cardiovascular disease than white adults. Growing evidence points to structural racism as a fundamental driver of this stark disparity, according to a 2020 presidential advisory from the American Heart Association. Structural racism refers to the systems in a society that create and maintain racial inequality. The damaging health effects of the underlying problem, racial discrimination, have been studied for decades. More than 25 years ago, sociologist David R. Williams, professor of public health at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, developed the Everyday Discrimination Scale. It's designed to quantify the hassles and indignities people experience in daily life and whether they feel this unfair treatment is due to their race, gender, age, or other characteristics. A recent update reviewed some of the cardiovascular effects related to race. While there is a good deal of literature on the health effects of stress, the traditional measures have not always fully captured the stressful effects of discrimination, which can extend beyond daily indignities to also include a higher frequency of traumatic experiences, such as being unfairly stopped by police and exposure to gun violence. Discrimination can also affect employment opportunities and advancement, which has downstream effects that contribute to health disparities, according to Dr. Michelle Albert, president of the AHA. If you can't get a well-paying job or develop wealth, these circumstances limit where you can afford to live. That, in turn, affects your access to healthy foods, safe places to exercise, and good medical care. In addition, discrimination has been linked to other factors that are hard on the heart, like social isolation, depression, and unhealthy coping skills like smoking and alcohol use. Like other stressful experiences, the experience of discrimination can activate the fight or flight response, triggering a release of hormones that raise blood pressure. Over time, blood pressure spikes can damage the blood vessels, kidneys, and heart, says Dr. Albert, director of the Center for the Study of Adversity and Cardiovascular Disease at the University of California, San Francisco. Given that cardiovascular disease is a leading cause of disability and death, the financial impact of race-based health disparities is substantial, says Williams. The cost to society at large includes not just higher health care spending, but also productivity losses related to job absenteeism and premature death. While blacks make up 14% of the population, nearly 40% of people currently living in the United States belong to a racial or ethnic minority. People in the other groups, which include Latinos, Asians, and Native Americans, also experience cardiovascular disease disparities to varying degrees. The AHA Office of Health Equity sponsors community and workplace programs to address discrimination and other barriers to equitable health care. But on a personal level, everyone can benefit from becoming more aware of their implicit biases, the unconscious assumptions people have about groups of people that may underlie some discriminatory behaviors. The data on the health effects of discrimination are a call to each one of us to treat each person we encounter every day with the dignity and respect that they deserve as a human being, says Williams. Next in the Harvard Heart Letter, here's an article entitled, What's the Latest on Wearables for Finding Atrial Fibrillation? Several smartwatch brands can detect this common heart rhythm disorder, but whether this feature can improve your health remains unclear. 5 years ago, the FDA granted marketing clearance for the first smartwatch capable of capturing the heart's electrical signal, known as an electrocardiogram or EKG. An app enables the watch to detect atrial fibrillation, AFib, the most common heart rhythm disorder. Today, four additional smartwatches with similar capabilities have FDA clearance, and more are expected on the market soon. Because bouts of AFib are often short-lived and sometimes symptomless, diagnosing it can be challenging. An annual ECG at your doctor's office, which lasts less than 10 seconds, may not pick up atrial fib if it is occurring only occasionally. And unless you have symptoms, medical devices that check the heart for longer periods of time don't make sense. But your smartwatch can continuously monitor your pulse for an abnormal, rapid, or irregular heart rate and tell you when to record an EKG, which involves opening an app and touching the side of the watch for 30 seconds. In theory, this capability could pick up more cases of atrial fib, which is important because atrial fib raises the risk of stroke. Knowing you have the problem means you can take action. For people at higher risk, taking anti-clotting medications may help lower the risk of stroke. But what do we actually know about how well these consumer devices work? And who might benefit from using one? If you already have one of these smartwatches or are considering getting one, here's what you should know. Currently, there are no randomized trials using smartwatches to screen for atrial fib that show a health benefit associated with their use. However, an analysis using simulated data based on average Americans suggests the strategy could be cost-effective in people age 65 and older, says cardiologist Dr. Sean Khurshid, a research fellow at Massachusetts General Hospital, and one of the lead authors of the study, which was published in 2022 in JAMA Health Forum. In older adults, consumer wearable devices have the potential to improve outcomes and lower costs by decreasing strokes, he says. How reliable are the readings? According to a study published in February 2023 in JACC Clinical Electrophysiology, about a quarter of the ECG readings from five smart devices were deemed inconclusive. But setting those cases aside, the devices were all highly accurate in finding atrial fib. The tested devices were the Apple Watch 6, the Samsung Galaxy Watch 3, the Withings Scan Watch, the Fitbit Sense, and the AliveCor CardioMobile. The devices are not cheap. Most ECG-enabled smartwatches start at around $250. People should also be aware of the potential emotional cost of a false positive result when the ECG incorrectly reports atrial fib, which could cause anxiety. In addition, processing the sheer volume of patient data available is already a challenge for many doctors, and the need to review multiple smartwatch ECG tracings could further strain our healthcare system. Finally, the people who would likely benefit most from atrial fib screening may be the least able to afford or know how to use a consumer device, an issue that could further exacerbate existing health disparities in this country. For people considering buying a smartwatch, the ECG recording capability is a potential added benefit, says Dr. Khurshid. But if you don't want to spend the money, there are many other ways to screen for AFib. These strategies, which include simply checking your own pulse or wearing a heart monitor for a couple of weeks, depend on your AFib risk and symptoms. If you already have AFib, a smartwatch may help you to monitor the condition over the long term, which could help inform your doctor's treatment advice. Now we're going to turn to research we're watching in the Harvard Heart Letter of August 2023. And the first short article is Healthy Diet Linked to Better Cardiovascular Fitness. A heart-healthy diet that focuses on plant-based foods is closely tied to improved physical fitness, a new study finds. The study included 2,380 middle-aged people in the Framingham Heart Study, a long-term, multi-generational study that seeks to uncover the underlying causes of cardiovascular disease. All participants underwent a cardiopulmonary exercise test, the gold standard for assessing fitness. They also completed questionnaires to assess the quality of their diet, noting how often they consumed 126 food and drinks during the previous year. Higher quality diets emphasized vegetables, fruits, whole grains, nuts, legumes, fish, and healthy fats, and limited red meat and alcohol. Researchers adjusted for possible confounding factors that might affect the diet-fitness relationship, including how many calories the participants consumed, their body mass index, and their routine physical activity levels. They found that healthy dietary habits were strongly and positively linked with fitness. The improvement in fitness seen among those with the healthiest diet was similar to the effect of an additional 4,000 steps every day, says the authors. Their study was published in the May 15, 2023 issue of European Journal of Preventive Cardiology. And then here's another brief article. 24-hour blood pressure monitoring outperforms clinic readings. Ambulatory blood pressure monitoring involves wearing a device that automatically records blood pressure every 30 to 60 minutes for 24 hours. New research suggests that ambulatory blood pressure monitoring, especially the nighttime readings, can better predict death from cardiovascular disease and other causes than conventional blood pressure readings done in a clinic. The study included more than 59,000 people, average age 59, from 223 primary care practices in Spain. Most were being treated for high blood pressure. Researchers estimated the associations between patients' clinic blood pressure and ambulatory blood pressure monitor readings and death occurred during a median follow-up of nearly 10 years. They found that ambulatory blood pressure monitoring was almost 5 times more informative for predicting death than clinic blood pressure measurement. And the nighttime readings were about 6 times more informative. The findings highlight the need to evaluate and control nighttime blood pressure, said the authors, whose study was published online May 5th, 2023, by the journal Lancet. And also there's an article that says that the calcium score may foretell heart risks better than a genetic test. Specialized tests may help doctors better determine a person's risk of developing heart disease. A new study suggests that one such test, a calcium score, which quantifies the plaque inside the heart's arteries, appears to improve risk assessment, while a gene-based risk score does not. The study, published in the May 23rd issue of JAMA, included 3,208 adults from 2 large studies. None had heart disease at the outset. For each participant, the researchers calculated traditional heart disease risk score. And then the participants got a CT scan to determine their calcium score. After a median follow-up of just 14 years, researchers found that combining the calcium score with the traditional risk calculation provided a meaningful improvement in predicting heart disease. This was not the case for the polygenic risk score. The polygenic risk score may prove more useful in people who are younger than the study participants, whose average age was in the mid-60s. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.